News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Sound Bites. This is America's longest running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 1st of October, Anno Domini 2006. And you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And at 8 minutes after the hour, yes, it's Dan Cole in for Rob Linton. Rob is off somewhere in the wilds of the Northwest, one step ahead of the law.
Dan said he saw his face on a milk carton.
Sure. That's because we don't know where he's taking the milk.
Okay.
All right. We
knew he was.
You knew he's somewhere.
Yeah, I won't.
We'll be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use.
Even our stuff first, you can't use.
And even stuff you can't use. We don't care. Microsoft is still scrambling to patch some bugs. These are unfortunately.
Wait a minute! Isn't that an oxymoron?
Yeah, these are bugs that they got in July. We've seen it often enough. Somebody posts information on a new Windows exploit.
Wait a minute.
Microsoft follows it up July, with a warning to their customers.
August.
Yeah.
September.
Yeah.
This is October.
This is October. Yeah, and they're still patching the July bugs. It all happened again this Thursday, only this time Microsoft's warning that it's investigating new public reports comes more than 3 months after sample code showing how to take advantage of the flaw was posted to the web. The flaw that Microsoft just warned us about was first disclosed on July 18th as part of a month-long project by a hacker named H.D. Moore to expose problems in browser software. Moore called his project the Month of Browser Bugs. Month of Browser Bugs.
Well, Microsoft was encouraging hackers in that to try to break
into Vista.
Yeah, break into Vista.
And they did?
Yeah.
Wasn't it 100,000 beta copies went out and it was broken in a couple of hours?
Yeah.
And they were, just trying to beat on it. But you'd think, hello, if a hacker told you that they're breaking into the code.
Right.
In July.
Right. This guy Moore called his project the Month of Browser Bugs and ended up disclosing a total of 22 vulnerabilities in Microsoft products during that period. So far, Microsoft has patched two of them.
Well, see, making a hole is always a lot easier than filling it in again. You ever notice that? You dig a hole,
yes.
and then you try to fill it in again, and you keep all the dirt, and it just won't fill the hole?
Yes.
So patching holes is tough.
Yep. So Microsoft has, all of that work ahead of it, and according to Moore, it has even more, because in early August, he handed Microsoft another 70 bugs that he had not publicly disclosed, and Microsoft apparently told him that at least four of those bugs are exploitable. Earlier this week, Symantec Corp said Microsoft is the slowest of the major browser makers at patching its bugs. And we see that a lot. They talk about the number of bugs that are found in various products and how big they are and how bad they are. And Microsoft did a campaign for a while that they had fewer bugs. Internet Explorer had fewer bugs than Firefox and on like that. The average time that it takes Firefox to fix a bug, one day.
Because it's probably one guy opening the code himself.
Well, that's just it. Generally, the guy who finds the bug posts a fix.
Yep.
The company tests it, and out it goes. So, the idea is always update your stuff. But the reality is that if you're using Microsoft products, you are behind. That's just the way that's always going
to
be. You don't get a choice in that.
And the choice is to not use Microsoft products. And that's one of our agendas here, I suppose.
Yes.
There are alternatives. You don't have to run Windows, and you don't have to run Internet Explorer. There are alternatives that are perfectly viable.
Well, right. I just had a client. A number of these laptops and desktop units are now coming loaded with a lot of stuff that you wouldn't want on the machine anyways. And she was getting very irate. She says, well, my Word stopped working. Well, I brought it in, and I take a look at it. And, yeah, it was a 60-day trial. Well, get it working again. Sorry, I can't. You got to buy it. No, they said it included it. And yes, it included the 60-day trial.
And the screen that popped up every time she ran Word says, welcome to the 60-day trial.
Right, but people just click past that.
Yeah. So, you know, she didn't want... she goes, and you mean I got to pay and I forget the price on it?
It's $400 for the Microsoft Office suite.
I says, or I can
$700 if you want access.
If you want access, yeah.
And I turn to her and I says, but I could put something on it for free for you. She goes, but I want to be able to do my word processing.
Yeah.
I says, yeah? Well, how good is it? I says, this is very good. It's called Open Office.
Open Office?
Oh, yes. I've heard you guys talk about that. You can put it on for free? Yes, I did. She went away very happy.
Well, that's one of the things that I always try to do. I always try to give people as much free software as I can. Is it okay? Yes. Not only okay, it's okay for you to give it to other people.
Yeah.
That's what it's for.
And I told her the benefits of it, and working great.
Yeah,
and sort of ironically enough, at the, at our Apple Cider users group meeting that's coming up next week, not this coming week, we are going to have a meeting on living in a Windows world, and for Mac users trying to share files and emails with Windows users, you know, how do you make sure that they can read it, your document, when they right. probably have Word? And one of the choices, you know, last month we did free software and talked a lot about OpenOffice and AmiWord and all of the free alternative programs. So you don't have to buy, you know, the big expensive ones.
Right, right, right. Oh, and we got to go to the phones now, but we'll talk about Writely in a little while. You'll love that. We're going to go to the phones now. Our first caller is Steve from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's your question?
Hi. I have a high-speed internet service, which shall go unnamed.
Okay.
But I very often get over quota notice.
Yeah, that's a very common problem. The quota is at your internet provider. It's not your computer.
Right.
Your computer has been told, usually accidentally, to leave the mail on the server. Mm-hmm. So eventually the ISP server fills up and you can't get any more mail.
I go there and I go to webmail and I
right.
and I erase.
You
it
go
all
in and
out.
Delete them. You need to find the preference in your mail program
to download it to your computer.
Right, and uncheck the box that says leave mail on server.
Okay.
Or
now,
in some of the Apple programs, it's sort of reversed. The checkbox says remove from server and you have to check it.
Right.
And some of them it says leave on server and you have to uncheck
right.
it.
Right. So you need to read the thing carefully.
Okay.
The other thing you need to know is that this is both a good and a bad thing. If you leave it up on that server, it means you can get it through webmail anywhere you are.
On somebody else's computer if you happen to be somewhere else.
Right. Mm-hmm. If you don't leave it, but then your system clogs up, you got to delete it regularly.
Right. And there's a preferences thing when you go to the webmail that says you can click a box that says like save a copy.
Right.
Sent mail or something. So I always unclick that. So I don't want it. But then the next time I go in there, it ignored that and it's like reclicked or unclicked.
Yeah. Well,
make that stick. So is my computer like undoing that for me?
No, it isn't. That's something to do with your ISP, and you need to talk to them. Setting it at the actual email is not where you have to set it. You have to set it in the preferences. Now, do you have a regular email program that you use, or do you always use webmail?
No, I use mail. I'm a Mac user.
In the mail preferences, under accounts, under special, advanced, is the checkbox that says leave on server. Or you can have it automatically delete the mail from the server every week, every month, or every day.
Okay.
So that's a preference that you need to...
Is that under general?
No, it's under advanced. In preferences, accounts, advanced, leave mail on server.
Account information.
Yeah, then there's an advanced tab.
Oh, I see.
And a setting to delete the mail from the server.
Now, you have to be aware that that means you will no longer be able to view it in webmail.
Okay.
Yeah,
now living only on your computer.
So some people like to set that to automatically delete it after a week, so they can see the last week's worth of mail on the web.
Okay, well, that's a good idea. Now, how does it affect when, because I have, through this ISP, my kids and wife also have email addresses through there, so all their junk is building up too, right?
Right.
So it's really, they're probably my problem.
Likely true, yes.
I can send out a quarter of the mail, but theirs is just accumulating up to the max, probably.
Right. You'll have to make that preference change in each one of their mail programs as well.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Okay. Thanks a lot, guys.
And this in Outlook Express and Outlook, the setting is under Tools, Options, Leave Mail on Server. You want to uncheck that.
Well, for the kids, it'd be better just to get it down on the computer.
On the computer anyway, yeah. They don't need to.
Yeah, they don't.
But a lot of people get confused by that quota error, and you know, because it says your mailbox is full, so they go through their own personal computer and deleting mail, and that doesn't change anything.
Doesn't do so
right, and also, as Steve said, if multiple people have sub-accounts, it's all still one mail quota, often, right? So I believe on Frontier.
I think there's a master quota for all your mailboxes,
right.
And then each mailbox has its own quota.
And its own sub-quota, right,
right,
right, right. So you have to be fairly careful of that as well, depending on who your ISP is. But that's the way that works. Real quick, I do want to mention Writely at Writely.com. It's a new word processor that you get on the web. Steve will have that link up in just a couple of minutes. It's actually yet another Google product, and it's a word processor on the web. You can write your documents on the web. You can collaborate with other people on the web. You save your documents to the web. You print them from the web so you can access them everywhere. Of course, I guess the downside of that is Google sees your content, I suppose, but you can upload from Word. You can save it to your desktop. You can publish it to the web. It's pretty neat. It's at Writely.com. And you can see that we'll have a thing up there. But that's another neat new word processor I just saw. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan Cole, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on the greatest computer show in the known universe. And that's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
The president of...
And you're listening to Soundbites. Now, before we get back to the phones...
Oh, you know, we got to pass on some our sympathy to a very good friend, Paul Casarino. I think it was his mother passed away.
I didn't know.
For folks in the community.
Oh, Paul, I'm so sorry.
Yes, our great friend Paul Casarino. Back in the day, folks,
and I mean,
we're not talking that long ago. Back when we didn't have all this internet, you know, going the way it did, we used to have local BBSs. And within the user groups, you used to also have file libraries. So if you, say, wanted a particular program or that.
Yeah, there was no internet to go get it from.
Yeah, Paul held the library. And he was a member of PC Cube for years, very good friend of ours, used to run the BBS. And, I mean, he was just a jack of all trades, and it was... You know, just handy that, you know, if you needed a program, you submitted a disk 1 month, and then the following month, you got the disk back. But then when the BBS came up, all of a sudden the files were put up on the BBS, and Paul had it on CDs and that, so you could go and download that program when you needed it.
And he had his column that he talked about was Shareware Gems, which is a neat little double entendre, because he's a jeweler by trade.
Yeah, right.
He was one of the few of us that wasn't a computer geek all the time.
Yeah.
One of the few of us actually making a living out in the real world somewhere.
Yeah.
So really, our sympathy goes to you, Paul. Sorry for your loss, but been there, done that too.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
All of us so.
Well, back to the computer world. Zert.
Who?
Zert, the zero-day emergency response team. It's a group of well-respected security professionals, and what they're doing is they're offering security patches for out-of-support Windows operating systems, which, as you know, is all of them except XP.
Yep, everything is.
And Windows Server 2003. So what's happened is there's been the most recent one was a VML security patch, and that's a piece of Windows itself. And what happens is that can be exploited by somebody in a web browser or an email or whatever, and there's a problem. Microsoft brought a patch out for it, and then... but only, obviously, for Windows 2000 Service Pack 4, Windows XP Service Packs 1 and 2, and Windows Server 2003, SP1, and R2 inclusive. these guys have a patch out for everybody else. And you can get it at, Steve will publish the link, possibly correctly this time, at isotf.org/zert/download.html. Basically, don't forget, after October 10th, well, right now, the only operating systems for Microsoft that are still offering free updates and downloads are Windows 2000 Service Pack 4, Windows XP Service Packs 1 and 2, Windows Server 2003 Service Packs 1 and R2 inclusive. After October 10th, Microsoft said they will stop offering free security updates for Windows Service Pack 1 and Service Pack 1A. You will only be able to get security updates for Service Pack 2 for Windows XP. So if you are still running Service Pack 1, you are unprotected after the 10th of October. So be very careful if you're still running 1 to make sure that that you upgrade to 2 so you can still continue to get all of those good things. Now, that becomes a problem in general when you've got people like Steve, like Dave was saying, they don't read the screens, they're not paying attention, they don't notice they're not updating. I can't tell you the number of people I've talked to said, oh, I have McAfee. Yeah, but it hasn't updated in 2.5 years.
Yeah.
So it's something you have to be careful of, so be very careful. We're going to come back in just a couple of minutes. We have people on the phone. If you're not on the phone, I don't know why not. We'll be back with a whole lot more sound bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
Give us a call if you're in the 585 area code. It's 222-1180. Long distance is 800-295-1180 on the Choice One toll-free line. And, of course, if you're a Verizon Wireless customer, it's star 1180. So give us a call. It's all about the 1180 on that phone. Before we get back to the phones, there's a... I seem to be picking on Microsoft. There will be Apple stories later. attackers have targeted a new PowerPoint bug. Microsoft has a new bug to worry about this time in PowerPoint. McAfee has reported that attackers have been exploiting a newly discovered bug in Microsoft's Office presentation software in extremely targeted attacks. What happens is you get some files. They install malicious remote access Trojan software. That then attempts to connect to an outside web server that downloads some other stuff. This attack works on 3 versions of Office running on Windows right now. Office 2000, Office XP, and Office 2003. There may be other platforms, other Office applications that may be affected. Microsoft hasn't finished their testing yet. Microsoft has concluded that this issue affects users of Microsoft Office 2000, Microsoft Office 2003, and Microsoft Office XP. Symantec, McAfee, they've added signatures to their security products to detect this code. So upgrade. The point of this news item is upgrade your antivirus software. First, for those of you who have been running a 90-day trial of your antivirus software for the past 2.5 years, make sure it's actually updating. Make sure that when you run an update, the code is the latest code. It'll tell you what the last update was. Not just the time of the update, but what the signature on the code is. And that has a time in it as well, and that'll tell you whether or not it actually updated. Now, in the past few months, attackers have been focusing on Office itself. Microsoft's next set of security patches aren't due till October 10th. The software vendor has not yet said whether it plans to patch this latest PowerPoint flaw. Back to the phones. We have Paul. Paul from Pearport. Welcome, Paul. What's your question?
Yeah, my son, who's a freshman in college, somehow screwed up his Mac laptop. And what he said he did was he deleted 2 files that had password protection. Now, when you boot it, it comes up with a big stop sign symbol. My question is, do I have to send this thing back? Can I somehow recover from that?
If you have a backup, you can recover those files that he deleted. Otherwise, the stop symbol means that the OS has been corrupted and you need to reinstall the OS from the disks it came with.
Okay, so I can... But essentially, when I get that if I put the system disk into the CD drive, will it go to those automatically? Or I'm not a Mac person.
Yeah, you hold the C key down, and that tells it to boot from the CD and run the installer.
Okay.
There are two options in the installer to be aware of, and that's how the install will work. First option is an archive install, which gives you a brand new system. It archives the old system, puts a new system on.
Okay.
The second option is erase the hard drive and restore it to factory specifications. Be sure you don't click that one if you don't want to erase the hard drive.
I don't want to lose the stuff, so yeah. I don't think I want to click that one.
Yep, so make sure you click the archive install, and that will give you a brand new system and archive the old corrupted one off.
Well, Phil, you know, you could always threaten them. This way, you know, you tell them, you know, well, you get your backups right.
Yeah, right. We've had this discussion.
And you just tell him, well, we got to restore it back to the factory. And the minute he goes into a panic, where's your backup?
Now, I got to say, Paul, this is a first.
Torture him. You got to. You know, I mean,
it's not a first that somebody screws up their machine and blames their kids, but it is. It is. This is, I believe, the first time I've ever heard this from a Mac. From PC people all the time we hear, I was cleaning up my hard drive. Yeah, I didn't know what that command.com file was for, so I erased it.
If you don't if you don't know what something is, for heaven's sake, don't delete it.
Right, don't delete it. Ask a professional. But I've never heard of a Mac person doing this. I'm actually impressed.
Yeah.
Well, and the Mac is usually pretty good about preventing you from deleting things you're not supposed to.
He actually had to enter his passwords, is what he told me. So I'm like, whoa. But yes.
See, now that you guys are Unix based, the machine will let you do stupid things if you tell it you're allowed to do stupid things.
See, Paul, you got a prime opportunity here. You got to take full advantage of it.
Oh, I've been trying to milk it as much as possible.
Oh, you gotta. I mean, you know, doom and gloom. Doom and gloom.
Well, we've already had the discussion about whether his university provides, network backup. So we'll go to the next level.
Yeah, right.
Oh, good luck.
Okay, thanks.
Good luck, Paul. This is a first.
That was a good one.
That was a good one. Write this down. Clearly a first. Our next caller, Dave from Webster. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
I got a major problem.
Uh-oh.
I got a couple things going on. I get a blue screen when I try to boot up, and it flashes. I can barely read it. Then I get an error when I boot up again that says my memory's been changed. And it takes me to, do I want to boot up in safe mode with command prompt, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what I try, including last known good configuration, it won't boot up. It just takes me and just keeps running through that cycle.
Okay, now did you have the case off, the cover off this thing and look at the memory or anything?
No. I think I did this like, I don't know, 40 times. I got into safe mode once with the command prompt and once on Windows. I ran my antivirus, didn't come up with anything.
Yeah, it's likely not.
Well, it's probably the same, same problem the previous guy had. One of your system files has corrupted and you need to reload Windows.
Yeah, and what you can do is you've got your original Windows CD.
I do, and I thought I knew how to boot up from that, but when I tried to boot up from the CD, it wouldn't let me do that.
What you've got to do is you got to put that CD in, and you'll watch on the screen, as long as it's set up to boot for, check the CD first.
Right, that's
first.
The first thing you have to do is go into BIOS and tell
that.
It to boot from the CD
All right,
first.
What you're going to see is then on the screen, it's only going to be there for a brief moment, is press any key to boot from the CD.
Okay.
And sometimes that doesn't happen on a cold, or it only happens on a cold start.
Yeah.
You can't do a warm restart. You actually have to put the CD in, power off, then power back on, and have it boot from the
CD.
Now,
here's the key.
Okay.
When that first CD goes, that CD comes up and the screen comes up, you're going to press enter to continue. You'll see a thing that says repair. You don't want that.
Right.
You're going to go ahead and go on, and then it's going to have you hit the F8 key after it finds all the things, the agreement. At that point, after you press the F8, you're going to get another screen.
Okay.
There you will see the option to repair.
Okay.
Select it then.
Okay.
The second time you see the R is when you select it. What it will do is replace just the Windows files over Windows.
Gotcha.
And that's listed in one of Dave's tips from July 25th, 2003.
I want to ask you one more thing. I haven't seen that, press any key. I'll give it a shot on the cold startup.
Yeah.
But I did get to the point where, in safe mode, where I ran setup from the installation disk, and it said, we can't do that, you've got a newer version.
Well, if you can get into the setup mode,
yeah,
or safe mode, If you go into the control panel, under accessories, under system tools, is a restore.
Okay.
Now, if you can pick a date, say, last week or the week before that, and go to one of those points and see if it'll do it from there.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, the problem is if you're booted, say, with SP2, Service Pack 2, and the your install disk is only SP1,
right.
The installer in the GUI mode won't run because it says your disk is too old.
I see.
But if you boot the CD, then it will, in essence, downgrade you to the original SP that was on your install disk.
And then you got to do all the updates again.
Okay, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Yeah, it's not terribly easy to refix something like that, but it's
it
good to know
time.
That it can
it
be done.
Time.
Exactly.
Yep.
I would also have checked his memory if it were me.
Well, because I've been C2,
yeah.
It's causing blue screens.
Yeah, all right.
Some new update conflicts with some old update.
Well, you get the blue screen.
Well, there's a shocker.
Yeah.
You'll get the blue screen, and it'll say HAL.BAL is corrupt.
Oh, the hardware access layer.
Yep.
All right, listen, we're going to take another quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Dan Cole, ably sitting in. I just have to stop talking today. Sitting in for Rob Linton, I'm Nick Francesco. Hopefully I will find a new tongue and a new set of teeth in the next couple of minutes. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes at 41 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. To Sound Hall. You know our numbers. The local number is 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line, 800-295-1180. And, of course, Verizon Wireless customers, it's star 1180. That's 222-1180, 800-295-1180, and star 1180. There is no excuse for not giving us a call. Microsoft has released a patch.
Which one?
For an Internet Explorer flaw. What's interesting about this is we've talked about this before. Microsoft has what I call the Microsoft Monthly Visitor. They put out patches once a month, just once a month.
It almost sounds obscene. You
it
know
is.
That.
It is. They only put out things once a month. It is obscene. however, they did an off schedule. This one is so bad that they started distributing this last Tuesday, an emergency patch for a flaw in Internet Explorer. The patch fixes the flawed way Internet Explorer handles the vector markup language, VML. This is the one we talked about earlier from Zert, the zero-day folks.
So they got a patch to fix the patch that should have fixed the other patch.
Exactly. All the patch fixing that wasn't done is being done now with the fixing of the patches. And at any rate, they've started to do that finally. These attacks began detecting them 8 days before the patch, and so there they go. However, over the weekend, there was yet another zero-day attack. So we'll see what happens with all of this. But it's nice to know that Microsoft was at least out off-cycle to patch something that really desperately needed to be patched. I mean, you know, they've been sticking to this once-a-month cycle for whatever reason. And then leaving people vulnerable for like
and
ever.
And that doesn't gain them a lot of, warm fuzzies.
Well, that's the big thing. People are really porked off about that.
Yeah, I mean, hello?
Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Josh from Oakfield. Welcome, Josh. What's your question?
Yeah.
Wait, where is Oakfield?
What?
Where is Oakfield?
It's about 10 minutes outside of Batavia.
Oh, yeah, okay, right.
Yeah, I was wondering how to forward a port on my computer.
Depends on what firewall you're using.
I just have a Windows firewall.
Then you can't.
Yeah, Windows doesn't let you forward ports.
Yeah.
It depends on which firewall you're using. Many people have something like a Linksys router or whatever, and that has a web interface that leads you through the process of forwarding a port. So you want to, for example, play specific games or whatever, and you want to be able to forward a port to something to let it do something specific. You can't with the Windows firewall. It's not sophisticated enough to do that. It's not flexible enough to do that.
You should turn that off and try using Zone Alarm.
Okay.
Which is a free firewall with a lot of controls behind it. It can sometimes be a little too much for novice users, but it does the kind of forwarding it sounds like you want.
Okay.
Right. And again, when you get that, it's real easy. Read the directions. There's a whole set of documentation. One of the things is how to forward ports, and it's pretty simple.
And what is that called?
Zone Alarm. It's from a company called Zone Labs at zonelabs.com.
Okay.
All right.
Yep. Thanks a lot.
Yep.
Good luck. That's a fairly sophisticated thing. Forwarding a port is something you usually do when, for example, you want to set up a game server or whatever. Now, what we should have said to him, and I didn't, was will his ISP let that port through?
And what different servers? Like, it's usually more thing for business too. That I've got three different servers in my office, and whether you're using the web server, the file server, or the FTP server, it forwards to a different computer.
Right.
You know, one thing, going back to that story you just read just for a minute, you know, boosting Microsoft's, you know, credibility in that. Well, this is what I'm hearing a lot in the neighborhood as far as the new Vista. You start talking to folks about moving right up to Vista. Like on other operating systems, you know, there was always that big anticipation and want to move up to the next OS. Well, with all the patches and the patches to patch the patches and everything else, they're just getting their machine settled in, and they're still doing patches with XP, and that's the only supported operating system.
Right.
So you're kind of in a corner there to be told, oh, now I got to go to another one.
Yeah,
they're already finding issues with that they're not reacting to. Like you said, even the story before that, reported in July, and they're now just getting to fixing it in October.
Yeah.
That is not going to build confidence for Vista when it comes out. A lot of folks, unless they're getting a new system, are going to tell Microsoft to pound rocks.
And you know, the general advice is if it ain't broke, don't fix it. If your computer's running fine now, you may not want to load Vista.
The problem becomes Microsoft does not make money if you don't buy a new operating system.
So they're stopping support of XP. You won't be able to load updates
anymore.
You will
have to update. The problem is so many of our listeners have machines that are not capable of running Vista.
So suddenly you have to buy a new computer.
Right. Well, it'll run Vista as if it were XP. They've now paid $200 for the privilege of keeping their machine exactly the way it was, essentially.
Yeah.
They don't get any of the new nifty features.
You know,
well, the eye candy really is all you're getting new out of Vista. But they won't get that. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. If you're on the line, stay on the line. We'll get right to you on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Sound Bites, on 1180 WHAM. Woohoo! Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
We're still getting used to this new intro method here.
Yeah.
Right.
And you got to jump up and down and wave your hand a little louder.
Yeah, exactly.
That's louder.
That's what we need. I apologize. They have this new way of opening each segment, and I'm not used to it yet. I apologize. We're back. Give us a call, 222-1180. On the Choice One toll-free line, it's 800-295-1180 in Verizon Wireless customers. Star 1180. Real quick before we get back to the phones, we are going to take another call. There's a brand new germ-free mouse out. The average desk harbors 400 times more bacteria than the average toilet seat, according to a University of Arizona survey. Man, I tell you what, if you're the sort of person who hates to hear that, IO Gear just announced its germ-free wireless laser mouse. It not only is a wireless laser mouse, it can inhibit a wide range of antibodies, viruses, and algae. The outer shell of the mouse is covered with a nano coating consisting of titanium oxide and silver nanoparticles that can prevent or deactivate bacteria with 99% efficiency. It is both PC and Mac compatible, and it is $40 and includes a carrying case.
Ironically enough, Mythbusters Marathon this weekend, they tested the 5-second rule.
Yes, they
did. If something lands on the floor for 5 seconds, can you still eat it?
Yep.
Time doesn't make anything, but they did notice that something wet picks up more bacteria than something dry.
Right.
So the salami that hit the ground was worse than the cracker that hit the ground.
Right.
And they also tested a dog's mouth dirtier than a human's mouth.
Right.
And it is.
Of course it is. Number of germs it is, but most of those germs are not transmittable to humans.
Yep.
Our next caller is Chris from Atlanta, New York. Welcome, Chris. What's your question? Chris, are you there?
Yep.
What's your question?
System startup. My system started to start up a lot slower, and I'd use the utility to go in and look at what is being started up.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the files are somewhat cryptic. All of them are.
Yeah.
Is there a utility or a website that I can go to find out, okay, don't delete this one or this
one? One of my tips, if you go into the soundbites.org, under my tips, I have a listing of the ones that usually should be there and running.
And oftentimes, if you Google the file name, it will tell you someone has posted somewhere what it is, and you can decide if you want that or not.
The real problem becomes you've got 8 or 9 instances of SVC host. What is that? Who knows? I mean, who knows what's running behind that?
MS Messenger and
right.
The audio you don't need running.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's true, Chris. The system is very cryptic. Microsoft does not provide a lot of information on what all these things are. The other thing is, if your system was running well and now is slow, you might certainly want to think about dancing the Security Tango at securitytango.com.
I do it about every week.
There you go, then. That helps. That certainly helps. A lot of programs load things they don't need. One of the big things that slows systems down is fonts. If you're one of those people who's loaded 500, 1,000 fonts, whatever.
And you may not have known it, but when you load software, it loads fonts.
Right. Those fonts get loaded every time it boot up. And font management is ridiculously slow under Windows. And it slows things down considerably, particularly at startup. Not so much once the system is running, but certainly at startup.
At startup. That's where I'm having the problem, is actually starting up. I mean, it's gone to...
How much memory do you have in the system?
I think it's about maxed out. It's a T40. I think I want to say 1 point something.
That's fine. Now, you're running XP, right?
Yes.
All right, yeah. You really take a look at those things, particularly in terms of fonts. If you loaded all kinds of software nowadays, loads their own set of fonts, and that slows down boot up considerably. If there's fonts that you know you'll never use, like, you know, you're just a regular word processing sort of person, right, and you've got fonts, you know, with snow built up on the caps and that kind of silliness.
Well, the other thing, you can delete them. Yeah, and under MS config in the startup. Is where you can sit there and uncheck things, make a note of what you've unchecked in case you start it up and it's not helping it at all. You can check it back. But again, I have one of the tips that lists the things that are required to have there, and then you can kind of compare that to what's actually running and start experimenting unchecking those things and see if it has any big effect.
Okay.
All right.
That'll work.
That'll do it then.
Cool.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's getting to be, you know, to where so much stuff is just automatically thrown. Is people, again, don't read the screens, and it says, do you want to put this in your toolbar at startup? And they just click, yes, or next, and they don't look at the things that they're checking or having startup and doing that type of stuff, and starting up a computer becomes so slow.
And it looks like it's done. The desktop is zero. You try to click on something, nothing happens. So you click again and again and again, and nothing still happens. Yes. Eventually, it finishes booting, and all your clicks are activated.
Yes.
Right. And you loaded 5 or 6 of something.
Yeah.
I've seen that a lot. The days are gone where you can just click your way through things. You really have to sit back and read everything. We're going to take a quick break. Rob Jason's coming in with news and weather and sports and all the really important stuff. When we come back to the other side, we'll take a look at our weekly poll. We'll take a look at what goes on our website. We'll answer a whole lot more of your questions. And of course, we'll do all of that with the not dynamic duo, I guess, terrible trio of Dave Enright. It's Dave Enright, it's Steve Ray, it's Dan Cole, it's me, Nick Francesco, desperately groping for some sort of alliterative phrase and using the word quad. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180, the Choice 1 toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180, or *1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And it is 5 minutes after the hour. And before we get to the phones, let me tell you a little bit about what's going on in the news. We'll take a look at our poll and stuff like that. Greenpeace is pushing for a greener Apple computer. Greenpeace is putting the pressure on consumer electronics companies to become more green by using fewer toxic chemicals in their products. One company they've chosen to single out in this campaign is Apple Computer. They say it's time for Apple to use clean ingredients in all of its products and to provide a free take-back program to reuse and recycle its products wherever they're sold.
The irony is that Apple already does all that, but they report it differently. They report it in the amount of tons of waste recycled, not in the percent reduction, so Greenpeace is mad at them.
Right. And they've ranked the environmental impact of 14 top consumer electronics companies. The best are Nokia, Dell, Sony, and Samsung. Apple, Acer, Motorola, and Lenovo are at the bottom.
Depending on whose list you look at, Apple's at the top of the list in an amount of consumer recycling and waste products.
Right. So so every week we do a poll. Last week's poll was, should ISPs keep all our private data in case the government want to see it ever? The 315 of you voted, making it number 122 on the all-time hit list. This week's and of course, 71% of you said no, you treasure your privacy. 20% of you said, I don't care, I never do anything wrong. And 27 of you said yes, otherwise the child pornographers win. This week's poll is about how... About the article I just read. The question is, how much extra would you pay for a green Apple? And the choices are nothing, under $100, under $200, under $300, and money is no object. So far, we've had 77 people vote. 84% of you said nothing. 9% of you would pay under $100. 5% of you say money is no object, possibly because you'd also not pay. Or you don't buy Apple. 1% said under 200, and none of you said under 300.
This kind of goes back to a lot of the complaints that we've been having in the news and in other industries as well, with the illegal immigration problem. There was a big article on CNN this week that pears. There was a bumper pear crop in California.
Yep.
There aren't enough illegal aliens to pick them because that was most of their workforce.
Right.
So now that we've had a bumper crop, most of them are rotting on the trees. The price of pears is going to go up because we don't have enough workers that are willing to work to pick the plants.
Right. Right. So you want a green apple, but you don't want to pay for it. When you're done posting your vote in the poll, underneath that you'll see a small yellow box with a link that says "Give us your opinion." That takes you to my website, AskNick.com. That's AskNick.com.
What's the matter, Colonel Sanders? Chicken?
Very nice. Very nice. And when you're there, you can enter an actual opinion. The question, of course, is, do you take environmental concerns into consideration when you buy a new PC? So far, 8 of you have voted and find the whole concept ludicrous. That's fine. While you're there, take a look around. I publish a newsletter 3 times a week with interesting news and tips and tricks and rants and raves and website of the week and questions and answers and all kinds of other interesting things. And then come back to our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Check out our links. Dave's tip of the week is always up there. There's forums and, of course, the Soundbite Shop, where you can declare your love of all things Soundbites simply by spending money. How easy is that? All right, we're going to go back to the phones, and our next caller is Ron from Webster, New York. Welcome, Ron. What's your question?
Hi, fellas. I just got a quick question for you. It's actually a two-part question, but they're related. When I open a small program such as Calculator, it'll appear on a certain spot on the screen. Mm-hmm. And is there any way to change that default position? And also, in a standard website, the content lots of times is jammed all the way to the left of the screen or of the window, and there's a whole bunch of blank space on the right. Is there any way to change that to, say, center the content?
No, that's defined by the website at the other end and goes back to the original shape of computer screens is that they were all square. And now that more and more computer screens are wide, websites are showing up on the left-hand side with all the white space on the right-hand side.
I see.
Right, and there's nothing. There's you can't change that.
Yeah. It's a typical, you know, it's an easy center command that the other end can put into their code.
Uh-huh.
But there's nothing you can do.
Yeah, or programming
the other end. And as for the programs like calculators, some programs will remember where they were last placed. Many will not.
I see.
One thing you can try, and I won't promise this will work, but one thing you can try is to, position things on the screen the way you want them, but close everything else so that there's just that one thing on the screen.
Yes.
Then hit the F5 key.
Oh.
The theory is, and believe me when I tell you this doesn't always work. You have to click on the desktop first. Click on the desktop itself, and then hit F5.
All right.
The theory is it will then remember the position of the windows on the screen. That does not always work. It really depends on the program that you're running, actually looking to see where it's supposed to be.
I see.
As opposed to just picking a spot.
I'll give it a try.
Give it a try.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
Right. We're seeing that to be more of a problem these days as screens are getting bigger and bigger. You know, 20 inches is common now.
Yeah.
I remember when 13 inches was huge.
Right.
dual monitors.
Yeah, dual monitors is common. So the web designers and program authors have to start rethinking their design of how they write programs.
You know what's really tough for people using dual monitors? When something shows up centered.
Centered on the dual monitor, so it splits the monitor.
Right, it splits it in between. All right, our next caller is Lou from Fairport, New York. What's up, Lou?
Well, lately when I try to log on to my instant messenger, it sent me a message that says the AIM service can't be reached, and no matter what I do, I can't get on it.
Do web pages and your email work at that time?
My email works because I got Yahoo, which is different, but this is just the instant messenger.
Well, Yahoo's a web page. Where I was going with that is sometimes if your internet service is down, then the instant messenger won't work as well.
Yeah.
But if web pages are opening okay, then your internet's working.
Yeah, they're fine.
I actually saw that myself a lot this week. We use the AOL network in our office for instant messaging back and forth, although most of the time people find it easier to holler down the hall.
Yeah.
But they
make intercom systems.
I'm kind of thinking it was a problem at AOL this week.
Oh, yeah, I'm not seeing...
This has been going on for a couple of weeks with me, so I don't know.
Have you tried uninstalling and then reinstalling your AOL Instant Messenger?
Yes, I have. Yep, I had the older version, and I just got the new version on. I reinstalled it, and it still did the same thing. I went back into it, and it says the host is login.oscar.aol.com. Now, I don't know if that changed or anything, you know.
That shouldn't be.
It shouldn't have changed. Although there was the Comcast DNS failure this week, too.
Yes.
One of the major DNS servers on the internet failed and blacked out a lot of sites.
But it's back up.
It's back up, yeah.
My SP is highstream.com. I don't know if it's got anything to do with them. So I ran Adaware, I ran Spybot, I ran my AVG.
I don't think it's your ISP because if you weren't talking to them, then you wouldn't even get a web page.
No, I get all my other, everything else is okay.
Are you running a firewall on your computer?
Yes, I did, and I disabled it, tried to get on, I couldn't get back.
That still didn't work.
Couldn't get it. So I don't know what's going on with that. Everything else is working fine. I just can't log on to the Instant Messenger.
Yeah, when... That was happening to us this week.
You don't think it's a virus, do you?
Probably not. They usually want to keep the IM network running to help spread the infection.
Yeah, big time. Yeah.
I'm afraid at this point, all I can suggest is somebody's got to look at the screen with fresh eyes, so it probably is time to take it to a reputable dealer and let them take a look at what the problem might be. I'm sorry.
Have you tried checking the AIM website and looking up error messages or posting a question there?
Well, no, I haven't. What do you go to AOL.com?
Yeah, AOL.com and then to their IM department.
Or you can go straight to AIM.com
for
the instant messenger itself.
Okay, guys. Thanks a lot.
Good luck.
All right.
Let us know.
Yeah, I'd be
let us know what happens. I'd be very interested
when
in knowing.
I was having trouble this week. I just waited half an hour, tried again, and it worked.
Right.
But I would get kicked off a couple of times a day, too.
Yeah.
Right. Our next caller is Frank from Gates, New York. Welcome, Frank. What's your question?
Hi, how you doing today?
Peachy, you?
Pretty good. The question is Windows Update.
Yeah.
I am the administrator, and I'm getting an error number, which is 0X, as in X-ray, 8DDD, that's David, 0002. And it states that I have to be a member or the administrator to allow to receive the updates, and it's not letting me.
You've danced it. You've run Adware and Spybot.
Yep.
Because it sounds like you've got something else embedded in there. That even though you do have your rights, it's trying to fool it and say no, you don't.
Okay.
So you don't change the settings from what that spyware is trying to do.
Yeah, because all my settings are set for me being the administrator, and I even tried to go into safe mode, and it won't let me, you know, go into it from there. And I don't know. Is there a way of setting up your safe mode to access the internet?
Yes. When you're booting up and you hit the F8 key and you get the screen, there's safe mode and then there's safe mode with networking.
Okay.
It's the second option down if you select that. And then when you get the screen, instead of going on with the username, go on with the administrator.
Okay.
I just found a Microsoft Knowledge Base article on the problem.
316524.
Yep.
Yeah, it's the one I found.
Yeah, a lot of times, go back to what we said earlier, Google that error number and you might find what it is and how to fix it.
Okay.
And Microsoft has a couple of suggestions on how to fix it, and we'll get that loaded on our website shortly.
Okay.
They actually have 6 methods on how to try to fix it.
6?
Yeah.
It's Windows.
Well, depends. Yes. Yeah. Also, be careful of which one you use. There's versions for both XP and 2000. Make sure that you're...
Yeah, read it over carefully in the correct version.
Okay.
All right?
All right, thank you, guys.
Good luck.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, we see that a lot. People get an error message, and often enough, you're right, if you Google it, you know what you're doing.
Yep.
Our next caller, I don't know that we have enough time for another caller.
Yeah.
Yes, we do. Our next caller is Anthony from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Anthony. What's your question?
Well, I was interested in that conversation about fonts. But how do you get rid of the fonts? How can you find those fonts that are loading at startup?
All fonts load at startup.
Yeah, and they're in the font folder.
Which is in the control panels folder.
Ah, okay, so control panel.
Yeah, and you can go into the fonts, and if you don't want a particular font, within that folder, it gives you the option to remove it.
I basically just drag it out of the folder. You don't have to delete it if you want it later. Or may want it again sometime, just make another folder, you know, uninstalled fonts or something like that.
Right.
And to keep the system as lean as possible, you know, drag most of them out and only put the few in you want now. And when you're working on a project, you can log in and out.
This is working in control panel fonts.
Right.
Right. And that'll help you remove them forever.
Yep.
And it will also let you install fonts that you may have downloaded from the web or whatever.
But the thing that is, though, Steve, I don't know if just dragging them out will do it, because I think they're loaded in the registry.
Right.
I think they're part of the registry. So if you wind up just dragging them out, I think the registry is still going to remember that they should be there, and it could cause issues. That's why I say if there's some obscure ones, like Nick was saying, you know, ones that you... And it'll show you on the screen what the font looks like when you
select
what particular font. And if you don't think you're going to use it, just uninstall it. One, it frees up more disk space.
No, you can just delete the font.
You can delete it or uninstall it.
Right, deleting it does uninstall it. I'm on a Microsoft Knowledge Base.
Now, you don't really lose anything, because if you run something and you know that font could be provided again.
Yeah.
Right. Now, there are several fonts you should never delete, or Windows will quit working.
Roman.
Times Roman, Arial, Courier, Symbol, Wingdings, MS Serif, and MS Sans Serif. So if you delete those, Windows will quit working.
Okay.
Yeah, so don't delete those. But any of those extras you may have found or gotten, you can delete those with no trouble.
Fonts. I got a few extra, I think.
Yeah. There you go.
Corel. Remember Corel used to load
hundreds of them.
Well,
It came with several thousand in a printed book, but then loaded several hundred of them right off the bat.
Unless you're doing a lot of posters and things like that, my wife every once in a while comes upstairs and she came upstairs the other day to see my machine. She went, "What is this font?" I said, "Honey, it's a Linux font. I don't think I have it available for Windows." So she said, "Well, I'm going to have to use your machine. Do you have?"
I'll find it for Windows.
Yeah. So I said, she said,
"You ain't getting out of that one."
"Do you have PowerPoint?" I said, "I have something just as good. It's OpenOffice Impress. Here it is." She said, "Well, this works just like PowerPoint." "It is PowerPoint." I said, "It's not PowerPoint, but it works just like it."
So and you just lost your machine.
I just lost my machine now. I can't win. My daughter uses it. My wife uses it. They have their own machines. Use your own stinking machine. All right. We're going to say, that's it. I have to get the lousiest machine. Give them the best machines. Keep the lousiest machine for myself, and then nobody else will touch it.
Or at least the one with the worst case on the outside.
You are learning, Grasshopper.
Listen, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Dan Cole, who keeps us on the straight and narrow, with me, Nick Francesco, at 21 minutes after the hour, 60 degrees in downtown Rochester, New York. You are indeed listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe. And do I have to tell you what if I have to tell you what that is by this point, for Pete's sake, you haven't been listening long enough. You know it's the name of the show. It's the name of the website. We announce it about 200,000 times a day. It is, say it with me, and it's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
Wham!
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
Give us a call. The number is 222-1180. Outside the 585 area code, it's the Choice One toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180. And, of course, if you are a Verizon Wireless customer, it's *1180. Before we go back to the phones, hey, guess what? More battery recalls. Yay!
Well, you knew that was coming. Hello, there's only, what, maybe two distributors of batteries for most of the major laptop companies.
Well, and the big thing is it's not just laptops. It's digital cameras are now getting caught in this recall.
Right. It's anybody using Sony batteries, apparently. Toshiba Corporation announced Friday that it is recalling 830,000 batteries made by Sony for its laptops. This is the latest in a growing global recall involving Sony batteries. The tally of recalled batteries is at about 7 million worldwide. This particular recall involves Dynabooks, Cosmos, Satellite Portage, Tekra models. Breakdowns, dates of manufacture weren't immediately available, but will be online on their site.
Basically anything in the last 2 years.
Yeah, exactly. Fujitsu is making a decision about whether or not they're going to have a recall about the Sony lithium-ion batteries. Sony Corp asked manufacturers using its problem batteries to carry out a recall. Toshiba's recall was in response to Sony's request. Toshiba itself has not found any cases in which their laptops were at risk of catching fire. Overnight, IBM and the Lenovo Group said they were seeking to recall about 526,000 rechargeable lithium-ion batteries purchased with ThinkPad computers after one of them caught fire. And, of course, back in August, Dell asked customers to return 4.1 million batteries.
Actually,
and
Dell,
Apple recalled 1.8 million.
Dell just increased the number of units eligible for the battery recall. So if you have a Dell that wasn't eligible, go check again. It may become eligible.
It likely is eligible now.
And the fallout from a lot of this is that some of the major airlines are banning laptops.
Right.
You cannot take your laptop. We haven't heard of whether if you take the battery out, it's okay.
Right.
But you can't take your laptop on an airplane because they don't want them, you know, catching fire at 30,000 feet.
Right. One of the things we've always done is have a couple of spare batteries around for the laptops we have at work so that if somebody needs to, like, go somewhere and work, they can pull the certain models, like a lot of the Toshibas and a lot of the Dells. They have universal mounts, so you can pull like the CD-ROM drive and throw a spare battery into that port. So now you're just carrying around two explosive devices instead of just one.
And it's getting rough too because we can't even buy new batteries now. People want a second battery for their computer. We can't buy the new ones because they're all going into the recall.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you're looking to and all the companies are saying 6 to 8 weeks before your new battery will come.
Right.
So it's which is rough because if you rely on your laptop on battery, all the companies are recommending you take the battery out of your computer and don't use it. Period.
Right. So now, what about my iPod?
It's a lithium polymer battery.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We're all good.
Yep.
Different batteries. Yeah.
All right. Back to the phones. We have Barb from Marilla, New York. Welcome, Barb. What's your question?
I have a five updates here from Microsoft, and I don't know if I've neglected it or what, but I didn't think it was that long since I've looked. One is for a security issue and reliable multicast for denial of service if you don't update it. And the other one is a vector markup language.
Right, that's the one we were just talking about today. You definitely need both of those, definitely.
Okay, and the other one is about a memory corruption issue.
Yep, you need that one.
Okay, and the other one is a filter manager.
Yeah, pretty much everything that comes up you need to install.
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately,
everything that comes up you need to install.
I would not skip any. The thing about the update is that if you don't need a specific update, for example, there have been updates to SQL Server, there have been updates to Microsoft Access and Exchange. If you're not using those products, you won't be asked to update those. You won't be asked to install those updates.
Oh, because I can recall a little while ago there was some kind of update, and you said don't update that one, and so that now I'm afraid to.
Right? No, that was a one-time problem.
Yeah.
Nowadays, if you are given a choice to do an update, do it.
The big issue to keep in mind is make sure it's the Microsoft Windows update screen that's popping up, and not a fake update screen that wants to install nasty stuff.
And how do you know that for sure?
Well, there's two ways. One is that unless you get a special one like we just announced, it only happens once a month on the second Tuesday of the month.
Okay.
And the other way is to look very carefully at where you're updating from. And to check, for example, the Microsoft website or our Soundbites forums or whatever.
I did go on there the other day, and for some reason I couldn't find any of these listed, so I thought, well, maybe they're okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. The reason we said no to one patch a while ago that you were referring to was because that patch had to have a patch to fix the other patch.
Right. I think I remember that.
Right.
Now.
But they've been at least a little better about it now.
Yeah, good. My other question on when I do my SpyBot, a thing keeps coming up. It says one of the problems is Windows Security Center dot antivirus enable disable notify.
That one you're going to get every time you run.
And the same with the firewall.
Yep.
And do I just
ignore those two?
Don't do anything with.
Yes, because you can run them, tell it delete it, and I guarantee it. If you were to shut off the computer, bring it back up, and rerun it. You'll find them again.
Oh, really?
The problem is that pieces of Windows are spyware. They track what you do and report back to Microsoft.
So it doesn't do any good to delete it then?
No.
Microsoft puts it back in.
Okay. Yeah. But it doesn't delete anything?
No, you're fine there.
Okay. Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much, Barb.
I know.
It is pretty interesting that Microsoft has viral aspects to some of its software, delete it, and it comes back at the next reboot.
Yeah, every time.
Yeah. All right, we won't go there. Our next caller is Landon from Rochester. Welcome, Landon.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
How are you?
Good, and yourself?
Good so far.
I had a question about Mac OS X. I'm a recent user that switched from Windows to Macintosh.
Congratulations.
And the problem that I'm having is about the WebDAV file system. This may not be what an average user uses, but I try and connect to a server that's professionally administered using the WebDAV interface. So I just hit Control-K, and it just appears as another disk in my computer.
Right, Apple's iDisk through their .Mac service does that as well.
Correct. The problem that I'm running into is I'm allowed into certain folders with a username and password. And if I click on a directory that I do not have access to, it'll pop up and say, you know, I'm sorry, this password doesn't work. Please enter in the correct password. Whether I hit OK or whether I hit cancel, it continues to ask me until the laptop reboots. It just will infinitely continue to do that over and over again. And I haven't been able to find a solution online. I talked to the person that administers the actual server, and he says Windows doesn't seem to have a problem with it. It's got to be a Mac thing. I'm sorry. And I wondered if there was any way I could kind kind of break out of that loop once I get into it, rebooting the machine.
The big problem is how Windows passwords are handled between the Windows desktop OS and the Windows server. It's assuming a synchronization that your local Windows username and password is identical to the Windows username and password you use on the server. And you can really screw up a Windows server by having a different username and password on your desktop. And oftentimes it will not let you into the server because it's expecting to see your Windows password, not that's different from the server password. So the Macintosh has sort of run into that situation because the Mac username and password usually isn't the same as your Windows server username and password. So sometimes you can alleviate or at least minimize the problems by making your Mac administrator username and password the same as what the Windows server expects to have.
But Landon, what I think you're saying is you've clicked on something that you have no access to, and
correct,
it keeps asking you for access right up until you reboot.
It keeps trying to reopen that folder or finish opening that folder, possibly for every single file in that folder.
Correct.
So you have to hit cancel for every file it's trying to.
And there's
no
way to tell it stop.
You can force the Finder to quit and reload your desktop.
What command would I issue to tell the Finder just stop? You know, stop doing this. Let's start from scratch.
Same command to make any program quit. And in the Apple menu, it's the force quit command, or the keyboard equivalent is command option escape.
I see. Alrighty. Alright, well, I'll give that a try. It's a frequent issue just because I get into an actual root folder, and then from there I have to navigate to the actual folder that I wish to use, and if I accidentally click on a folder, now I gotta shut everything down and restart the laptop in order to actually go and try and attempt it again.
Right. Sometimes I've noticed some of the wording of those error messages are odd, where it says, do you want to re-enter your password, yes or no? And if you say yes, it lets you re-enter your password. If you say no, it enters the old password again.
Yeah, right, as opposed to, I just don't want to do this anymore.
Right, yeah, there's no third option saying stop trying to log in to that folder.
Correct, yeah, and I think that's what I'm actually running into.
Right.
All right, well, I will remember that command next time I try and access it.
Cool, thanks.
Thank you.
Alternately, stop clicking on things you don't have access to. That's your other choice.
Which, the backstory of that one is the server administrator, he shouldn't even be able to see a folder he doesn't have access to.
Right, you would think so. Right, all right. All right, our next caller is Ted from Churchville, New York. Welcome, Ted. What's your question?
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
In the local area connection status, there's a activity monitor, sent and received packets.
Yep.
And I get after the computer has been on a while and I have a high-speed connection, it shows, you know, like 4 gigabytes and then 8 and 12 huge amounts of packets sent. And I turned off the QoS packet scheduler in the local area connection properties. But it still does this, and I'm wondering if there's another thing that I need to do to stop those large numbers of packets from being sent.
When was the last time you ran the Security Tango?
At least a month.
Okay. I would do that now.
Okay.
I would do that right now. Go to securitytango.com, click the Let's Dance button, and go for it. What is likely happening is that your system is sending data out behind your back. If it were the lots of gigabytes received, that's one thing. Because you're always receiving packets that your system is dumping.
Right.
But if it's sending lots of packets, then it's very, very possible that you've gotten caught by a virus.
What firewall are you using?
The Windows standard firewall.
Well, yeah. We suggest turning that one off with extreme prejudice. And instead running Zone Alarm, because one of the nice things about Zone Alarm is it not only protects you from things coming in, it protects you from things going out. It will ask you not only do you want to let this thing in, but, oh, something on your system, and it tells you what that is trying to get out. Do you want to allow that? And if it's not something you started or it's not something you're doing, say no.
Give you a heads up.
That won't clear off the virus, but it'll prevent you from spreading it. And it, you know, depending on what you're sending out, could be spam, could be porn, could be any one of 100 things. So okay. you want to dance the Security Tango today. Remember, get to that Let's Dance page, print it out. Do not skip any of the steps. Do not.
Okay. Okay, I understand. Thanks.
Okay.
Yep.
Good luck.
Yep, thank you.
All right. I hear from the C&W in the background that that we're going to be taking another quick break. We have plenty of folks on the line, but if you have not called us up, give us a call. Remember, it's 222-1180 if you're in that 585 area code. 1-800-295-1180 on the Choice One toll-free line. And, of course, Verizon Wireless customers. It's Star 1180. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. We have Dave Enright. We have Steve Ray. We have Dan Cole in doing a great job standing in for Rob Linton, who, as you know, is one step ahead of the law somewhere in the cold Northwest. They had 2 feet of snow somewhere. Where did they have? I don't remember where that was. But we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more sound bites on the greatest computer show in the known universe. And that is only on 1180 WHAM. So stay tuned, call in, join us, and we'll all have fun. It is 40 minutes after the hour, and we will be right back.
Morning.
Welcome back. You are listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Zeke Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And our numbers, we have a few minutes left. You can give us a call in the 585 area code. It's 222-1180. On the Choice One toll-free line, it's 800-295-1180. And for Verizon Wireless customers, it's Star 1180. Before we get back to the phones, here's your chance, everybody. Intel is offering a $1 million bounty for the sexiest PC design.
Came out at the Intel Developer Forum this week after they had people from Apple showing how great the new Macs were using the Intel processors.
Exactly. So there's a $1 million, it says $1 million in prizes. So I don't know if that's a single, yeah. I don't know what the prizes actually are. To the PC designer and maker that builds the most stylish small computer optimized for multimedia use at home, the design must feature Intel's new Core 2 Duo processors and Vive multimedia technology, V-I-I-V. I don't truly know how that's pronounced. The Intel Core processor challenges to think outside the box. Think, so to speak, Think sexy, small, and sleek PCs optimized for multimedia entertainment. The contest will include payouts for mass producing and marketing the winning design. The winner is expected to be announced at the Intel Developer Forum in March in San Francisco, so it may well be that we finally get rid of the clunky white, gray,
think
black
outside
box.
Of the gray beige box.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, exactly. That's one of the advantages the PC has had over the years is the standardization makes them cheaper. You can buy a generic PC case with a power supply for $10 because it's generic and ugly.
Right. Now it'll be back up to 20.
Yeah.
Right.
But it comes with a 5-day warranty.
Well, right.
We used to get some of those when we were building PCs. We got this really great chassis, and it comes with a 15-day warranty. If it breaks, you throw it away by no one.
Exactly, because it's cheaper to do that than to send it back. All right. Our next caller is Jay from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Jay. What's your question?
I wanted to get the information on a program to do backups on my PC using an external hard drive.
Yeah, we talked about this a few weeks ago and put a bunch of different backup programs on the website.
I didn't find them when I went searching, so I'm the novice at hunting stuff down.
Let me find that links again. Basically, most of the external hard drives you buy come with their own backup program.
This one didn't have any software associated with it at all, unless it's got it buried in it already.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah, some of them do, some of them do not.
September 3rd, we listed a bunch of backup programs. See, July 10th, we did. There's a couple. There's several different classes. There's the regular ones for home users. Backup My PC is a nice one. And then there are some higher level ones where if you're doing several computers on your network, Backup Exec or Retrospect. The Windows Backup program works pretty good, but the Windows Restore program doesn't. So one of the tests is to make sure your backup works is to try to restore something.
Right.
In fact, a lot of the backup drives, Western Digital and Seagate, come with Retrospect Express, which is the personal version of the Retrospect Backup program.
Which is a very good one. Retrospect is very well thought
it's,
of.
A lot of times it's too complicated for average users because you can set it up to back up this these six folders on these five PCs every third Tuesday to this hard drive.
Uh-huh.
If you just want to back up this now, it almost can't.
Yeah, right.
Back
right.
up my hard drive now is almost, you know, too low for its capabilities.
Right.
Okay, so back up my PC is probably the place I should look.
Yeah.
Well, and you can go to download.com and search for backup, and you'll find a bunch of different backup programs. What brand of drive did you get that didn't come with any software?
Well, I don't know whether it does or not. I haven't plugged it in because I wanted to know what I was doing before I started. Western Digital.
Yeah, they usually come with
their own backup program. Yeah, check and see. It might already have it with it.
Now, would that come on a separate disk, or would it actually come on the hard drive?
Sometimes it's on the hard drive itself, and you install it from the hard drive.
Or it comes with a CD.
Right, or the CD. And it should be in the instructions.
There's no CD with it. All we have is the drive itself.
You bought a raw hard drive. You didn't buy a retail box. Yeah, the raw hard drives, you just get the hard drive. If you buy the hard
drive and a connection to the USB. USB port.
Yes, yeah, so okay. It came as a bundle all done up.
Yeah, check on the hard drive.
It may well be, yeah. It may well be that on the hard drive itself there
is
something.
You'll see a folder there that'll say backup software, and you go into that folder, or on the outside, there might be a setup program.
Did you get a little manual with it?
No manual.
That's probably on the hard drive as well.
You bought a raw drive that comes with nothing. If the retail kits often come with the CDs, the manuals, the backup software, and everything.
Well, this one is a raw hard drive.
Yeah.
There you go. So you may not have anything. Certainly, backup my PC is good. Retrospect is good. So either one of those should do you.
Okay. Thank you.
No, thank you.
Okay. It may be impossible to go to, I'm looking now on Western's website, to download their backup software separately.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a possibility. Steve will look into that. He'll have a couple of minutes to do that because we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, he'll tell you whether or not he was successful. And if he was, of course, it will be available as a link on our website. As always, you can find all of those links by going to our website, soundbites.org, bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you, clicking on the links tab, the third choice down is the list of sites mentioned weekly on the show, and that's where you can download that. You spelled rightly wrong both times, by the way.
Both times? I thought I got it right the second time.
You got it right. No, I don't think you did. Anyway,
sorry.
That's okay. We'll fix that, too. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Dan Cole, with me, Nick Francesco, at 51 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe. 17 years and running strong. We are Soundbites. It is 60 degrees in Rochester. Listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
At 55 minutes after the hour, let me quickly do one more news item before we get back to the phones. Intel is readying quad-core chips. We've had the duo cores. Now we're going to get quad cores. Intel plans to begin shipping them pretty soon. They have four computing engines on a single chip. The first chip, the Intel Core 2 Extreme quad-core processor, will be available in November. It will improve performance 70% over their current chips with one or two computing cores. The new chip is aimed at gamers mostly, people with heavy-duty computing needs. For general consumers, Intel will ship a quad-core starting in the first quarter of 2007. And for businesses, Intel will begin shipping four-core server chips later this year. A low-energy quad chip for servers will be launched early next year. I'm definitely looking forward to that. According to analysts, this should deliver a 300% improvement in performance per watt over the next 4 years. They're looking to beat AMD. They're also talking about 80-core processors in the hopefully not terribly distant future. Of course, you'll need a cooling plant the size of Cleveland to run it, but you'll have it. Our next caller is Justin from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Justin. What's your question?
Hey, guys. I just built a computer about 6 months ago or so, and like one out of every five times that I start it up from a cold start, my monitor doesn't work. I don't even get the BIOS. It just goes right. The monitor itself goes right into hibernation mode, and I just have to constantly restart it and restart it until finally it works. Any idea why?
The monitor or the computer?
The monitor. The computer starts up no problem.
First thing, try a different monitor and try that monitor on a different PC to isolate if it's the computer itself or the monitor.
Okay. Could be the video card.
Or the video, the video card in the computer, yeah.
Right. If I was to go, if I was to buy another video card like I have and hook it up SLI, and if the current one that I have is bad, is it then going to be the weakest link of the set and I'll still end up getting the same problem, or do you think hooking up SLI might override whatever might be going bad?
Well, if it's the card, replacing the card will fix it.
Yeah.
Right, I don't want to replace the card. Well, the point I was making wasn't in replacing it, but adding to it and hooking them up in SLI mode.
Well, yeah, you're definitely, if that card is the one that's causing you problems, then you're going to have to replace it eventually, or you're going to continue to have the problem.
Okay. It may not be the card is failing. It may be you're overdriving the monitor. It's the monitor can only do 60 hertz, and you're pushing it to 80 hertz or something like that.
Yeah, it's not that, but why would it
work? Have you tried another monitor on this computer?
Not from a cold start, and
right.
It's what so often unpredictable happens, that I can't.
Right. What often happens is this: you sometimes get a small hairline fracture in one of the traces on the board.
Okay.
And think about this: when it's cold, they're separated. When the card heats up, what happens? It expands,
sure.
Closes that gap, and it works. So
okay.
On a cold boot, it doesn't work. But once you've rebooted five or six times, the card is warmed up, it's expanded just enough to make that connection, and it boots up just fine. If you were to leave the machine on 24/7, you wouldn't have a problem. But because you turn it off again and then on again...
You wouldn't have that problem.
You might... You're right.
Well, I have... currently, what I do to just avoid the problem is I leave my computer in sleep mode instead of turning it off now. And coming back from sleep mode, I never have the problem.
See, that's because the card is still warm. It's still being used. Sleep mode doesn't really turn anything off. It just gives it lower power.
Although a lot of desktops have trouble with sleep mode and can't wake up from sleep
on a desktop. Right.
This is the first computer I've ever had that sleep mode actually works on.
Right. But that's the reason. And you know what? The problem is that over time, that crack is just going to get worse and worse and worse, and eventually you're going to have to replace it anyway.
And if it's only 6 months old, you probably can get it replaced under warranty.
Yep.
And I would do that right away.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, thanks. We are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. Apparently, you need to call in earlier next week. And we will be back next week. We will be back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, possibly with Dan Cole, maybe with Rob Linton. We don't know. Depends on whether or not the witness protection thing works out for him. We'll be back. I'm Nick Francesco. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.